That woman.
Has anything like this ever happened before? Emma asked. We've had a delicate situation or two over the years. One of our clients was found unconscious. He had a stroke and went to the hospital, and from there into a special care home. Nothing like this. People don't just have dust and dirt, Riley said. They have complex personal lives. Some of them have serious problems, and we're in their private space. We have to be vigilant and blind. It's a very difficult balance. I'm sorry this happened.
The other crew, Emma said. Are they okay?
Not at all,
Nick said.
It was Cora, Maria, and Connie, and they're shook up. They're going to take Monday and Tuesday off, and if they need to see someone, like a counselor, we'll find someone.
Was it horrid? Deli asked.
One bullet in the back of his head,
Nick said.
He still had the TV remote in his hand. Looked like it might have happened much earlier or even the night before. Ooh, that ain't gonna play good for her,
Shauna said. Had he been beating her again? Emma asked. Everyone shrugged. I'm sure we'll get more information as time passes. I just wanted to be sure to tell you personally, since you know the couple and had some dealings with them and the police. Everyone okay?
Sure, Deli said. They have kids, you know. Grown kids in their 20s.
I know. Emma?
Yes, fine.
She shuddered, remembering Richard. Remembering the cruelty of his suicide. The horrific sight. The smell of blood and gunpowder. His open eyes and gallons of blood. The smell of death and all its atrocities.
Fine, she said again, standing.
Then I think we're finished here. Nick, you'll let me see that memo before you send it out to our crews.
Definitely.
Thanks, everyone.
Emma lingered as people slowly left, talking among themselves. When Riley was alone behind her desk, gathering up her purse and briefcase, she approached.
Excuse me? When would be a good time to talk? There's something I should tell you.
Is it going to upset me?
Riley asked.
Probably.
Riley hesitated. Sit down. Let's get it over with.
Emma told Riley about Bethany's house. Bethany, so frail and pale. Emma leaving her phone number and Bethany calling it.
You have got to be kidding me,
Riley said. Emma shook her head.
And I don't regret it. She sounds better since the holiday is past, but I have no idea how to help her. The family situation sounds so sad. Her stepmother wearing her dead mother's clothes? My God. I don't know what to say or do. I just know that it won't help her if I cut her off, if I don't take her calls. Mostly, I just listen.
Are you going to fire me?
You've put me in a terrible position here, she said. You know perfectly well I can't fire you. My family will only come down hard on me if I do that. My mother, who I have learned you've been seeing, my brother, who is your current champion.
Adam has been a good friend. He's the one who suggested your company, which, by the way, I happen to like.
She laughed and shook her head. I actually look forward to work. The girls I work with are fantastic. The clients range from difficult to weird to sweet. Some of them I would actually miss.
Employees with a high school education and citizenship usually stay with this company for an average of 9 months. And I am stuck with you.
I should think it would give you great satisfaction, Emma said.
But tell me truly, Riley. Just for a second, put aside whatever differences we've had and tell me. If you'd been in my position and saw that note, would you have done something? Anything? You have a 15-year-old daughter. What if she were that lonely and had no one? Would you wish someone had answered her call, even if it was a lowly cleaning lady?
First of all, cleaning ladies are not lowly. Haven't you learned yet? We know more about our clients than they know about each other. Second, I don't know that I'd have done that.
Oh, you would too, Emma said. Just as you'd have called the police on Mr. Andrews.
I wouldn't have left my number, Riley asserted.
Then her own phone chimed. She looked at it and pressed a button, sending it to voicemail.
I admit I would have watched, waited, tried to think of a solution. A counselor?
She has a counselor, Emma said. A counselor who asks her if she's jealous of the new stepmother.
Dear God, what an imbecile. I knew of Mr. Christensen's marriage. When he filled out his contract, we always asked them to list the family members and pets in the household, and I knew he had a teenager and was engaged to be married. But I didn't know he'd been widowed.
Riley's phone rang again. Again, she looked at it.
She really wants me. I'm sorry,
she said before clicking on.
Yes, Maddie? Mom, we were in an accident. Someone hit us. We're taking Daddy to the hospital. Mom, he's hurt. He's hurt. Slow down, Maddie, Riley said.
She completely forgot about Emma as she put the cell phone on speaker so she could gather her purse, keys, coat.
Are you hurt? No, not really. But they couldn't get Daddy out right away, and they wouldn't let me go in his ambulance because they needed the room to work on him. Oh, Mom, what if he dies?
He's not going to die, Riley said. What hospital are you going to? Maddie asked someone.
Petaluma.
Are you sure you're all right?
A couple of bumps, that's all.
All right, I'm coming. I'm on my way. Riley ran around her desk, past Emma and out the door. 2 seconds later, she ran back in and said,
Jock and Maddie were in an accident.
Emma grabbed her tote and ran out with Riley.
I'll come. Lock the door. I'll be right behind you. You might need me.
For just a moment, Riley was thinking,
why would I need you?
But she didn't say anything. She just locked the door without bothering to check the office, turn off the lights, or anything. She bolted for her car, and without looking back at Emma, she jumped in and flew out of the parking lot and down the road. She still had Maddie on the line.
Okay, I'm driving. Tell me how you are,
she nearly shouted into the phone.
We're here. I'm going in with Daddy. No more phones.
Riley growled as they were disconnected. It took 30 minutes to get to the hospital, and Riley ran from the parking lot into the ER. She asked for Jock Curry or Maddie Kerrigan and was directed to the waiting area.
But are they all right?
She asked in a booming voice.
Mom?
A voice called.
Mom?
Ignoring all protocol, Riley pushed people aside to go into a treatment area where a series of beds were enclosed by curtains.
Maddie?
She called.
Here,
Maddie said. Riley found her sitting on a bed, holding an ice pack to her forehead, tears running down her cheeks. She embraced her and squeezed her too tight.
Mom, Daddy's hurt. They took him upstairs to see if he needs surgery. I had to call Grandma and Grandpa because I'm not old enough to make decisions for him.
Maddie, is he conscious?
He was talking a little. He has pain in his shoulder and stomach, and he got a cut on the head that bled everywhere, and he said he was bruised all over. He says he's fine, but the doctor says he's not fine and needs x-rays and stuff and to be checked for internal injuries and a head injury, so he's gone upstairs.
Have you been checked over? She nodded. She took away the ice pack to reveal a contusion.
I might have hit his head. Someone just ran into us. Kabam! She hit Daddy's side of the car and they could hardly get him out.
Then she burst into tears.
Mom, what if he isn't okay?
Shh, Maddie. He was talking and conscious. That's a good sign. They'll take good care of him. Adam jogged into the front entrance of the hospital, and Emma was there waiting for him.
How are they?
He asked. Maddie is fine, and they've taken Jock to surgery, but they're not sure they're going to operate on him. He has some kind of spleen injury that they might be able to manage with medication, but They'll have to watch him. Keep him. His parents came right away. Maddie and Riley won't leave until he's completely out of the woods. And I knew you'd want to see them.
Where are they?
They're all in the third floor waiting area outside of surgery. Quite the group.
Okay,
he said, grabbing her hand. I'm gonna go. Will you call me if you need me? If there's any change?
You don't have to go, Emma.
I think I should. I'm not family, and I'm not family of family. I just wanted to be here until everyone arrived. Just in case, well, in case Riley needed me.
I'm going up there,
he said. He leaned toward her and kissed her on the forehead.
Thank you. I'll call you the second I know something.
I'll be around. Go take care of your girls. Emma was glad to be leaving, though she was worried about Jock. She had a soft spot in her heart for the guy after his amends. If they kept him in the hospital for the weekend, she'd swing by and pay him a visit. Her phone chimed with a text, and she saw it was from Lyle.
Can you call or come by the shop before we close?
She got in her car and turned it on for a little heat, but she sat in the parking lot while she called Lyle. What's up?
You might want to hear this in person. Are you far away?
Half hour, I suppose. Just tell me. It's been a crazy day.
Well, it's about to get crazier. Lauren Shea stopped by the shop today.
My sister?
She wanted me to get a message to you. Rosemary wants to see you.
Well, that's gonna be pretty difficult, as I can't go to Palm Springs, Emma said.
She's back. She's ill, Lauren says. She's back in the family home with Lauren and Anna, and...
He took a breath.
She's in hospice care.
Wow. What about her husband?
I didn't ask. I have no idea what this is about. Just that she's back, and she's apparently dying, and she wants to see you. I have Lauren's number if you need it.
I don't know, she said. You know I'm afraid of Rosemary. She's mean. Do you suppose she's thought of one last mean thing to do to me before she dies?
I'll go with you,
Lyle said.
You might want to call Lauren and get more information before you walk into the lion's den.
Are you almost ready to close the shop? She asked. Can we grab a glass of wine? I have a bottle in the refrigerator at home.
Won't you be with Adam?
He asked. Not for a while. See, Jock and Maddie were in a car accident, and Adam's at the hospital. Maddie's all right, but Jock isn't. They might have to remove his spleen. The call came while I was in Riley's office. We were having a little meeting because one of our clients murdered her husband, and a cleaning crew found them.
And you want a glass of wine? Lyle asked. If I'd had that kind of day, I'd just hook up a nipple to the bottle and go to town.
Want to come over and watch me unwind? I'd like to talk out the situation with Rosemary.
I'll be there in about 30 minutes. Don't start without me.
Adam found Riley alone in the waiting room, and she jumped up when he came in. How did you know to come? She asked. I was going to call you and Mom in a little while, but I didn't want to scare you. Maddie's okay.
Emma called me. Where's Maddie?
She's in Jock's room. She won't leave him. She's fine, but it really scared her to see her dad all banged up and medical people rushing around him.
What happened?
A young woman ran a light and T-boned him on the driver's side. Her airbag deployed, so she escaped injury. But both cars are likely totaled.
Maddie wasn't driving.
Riley shook her head. Thank God.
Emma said his parents are here?
They went down to the cafeteria to get coffee. Mrs. Curry is a little shaken. I think they're going to call Jock's brother and sister. There could be a crowd soon, and he's in a holding room being monitored so they can take him into surgery if they have to. Apparently he has some internal injuries.
He said he feels like he's been thrown down a flight of stairs. He's in a lot of pain, and they have him medicated. The bruises on his face are starting to show up. She winced. He looks awful.
Are you trying to get Maddie to leave? Go home?
No, we're going to stay. I might run home and get her a change of clothes. She has blood on her clothes from Jock's head. Not much of a cut, but it sure bled a lot.
And Maddie? Anything at all?
Goose egg.
She touched her own forehead in the spot. Then her eyes filled with tears.
I had words with Jock Christmas night.
Adam frowned.
I thought the two of you did fine, he said.
Not at Mom's. I drove to his house. I wanted to talk to him about... oh, shit, about nothing, really. Just that Maddie's growing up so fast, and she'll go off to college and get married and have children, and... how are we going to balance all that?
Divorced couples do it all the time,
Adam said with a shrug.
I've never been in his house,
she said quietly.
He has a nice house. He has a room for Maddie.
What's the matter, Riley?
I was mean to him. I kind of picked a fight with him, and he said he did his best, but it was never good enough. You know, I'd never even been in his house.
You said that already,
Adam pointed out.
It's okay. The only relationship you had with Jock was the parenting of Maddie, and you both do that pretty well.
He implied I never gave him a chance,
she said.
Riley, what the hell is this?
I don't know. I don't know,
she said. She went for the purse she'd left sitting on the chair and dug around for a tissue. She dabbed her eyes and blew her nose.
I think I've made so many mistakes.
Maddie came into the waiting room with a doctor. The doctor had a bolstering hand on Maddie's shoulder.
We're going to take Mr. Curry into surgery. I think he's going to have to part with that spleen after all, and while I'm in there, I can look around for any other problems.
Can I talk to him?
Riley said, looking suddenly panicked.
He's being prepped, the doctor said. He'll be in surgery about an hour, then in recovery.
He turned to look down at Maddie.
When he wakes up in recovery, you can see him. But then you should go home for the night. He's going to be groggy, and it would be best for him to sleep.
I'll be quiet, Maddie said. I'll sit with him and be quiet.
If I thought he needed someone to sit with him, believe me, I'd put an RN at his bedside. But he's going to be monitored, checked regularly, and we're going to take good care of him. If there's any change in his condition, I'll call you personally.
But I'll see him after surgery? She asked.
Absolutely. I've got this.
Okay,
she said meekly. Adam waited around for the 2.5 hours it took for Jock to have surgery, regain consciousness and recovery, and see Maddie. During that time, more of Jock's family showed up, all wanting to see him. Adam had called June, and she came. He stepped outside a couple of times to text Emma and was relieved to know she was home and having a glass of wine with Lyle. When the doctor was finally ready to kick the whole lot of them out, June left with Jock's parents, holding Jock's mother's hand and reassuring her. Maddie seemed to be exhausted. Adam walked them out to Riley's car.
Would you like me to follow you home? Feel like talking about it?
What is there to say?
Well, I think maybe you have something heavy on your mind. Mistakes, Riley? I've always felt like you do everything right.
She looked at him with a weak and rueful smile.
Shows what you know.
I'm coming over,
he said.
You can put Maddie to bed and we'll talk a little bit.
No offense, Adam, but I don't feel like talking right now.
She stopped walking and looked in her purse, patted her pockets and said,
Nuts, no cell phone. It must be in the waiting room. Adam, take Maddie home, please. I'll be right behind you.
Sure. I'm parked right over here, Maddie. Let's get you home so you can get out of those bloody clothes and get a shower.
Yeah, I guess,
she said, leaning on Adam. He put his arm around her and opened the passenger door for her, settled her into his car.
Thanks, Uncle Adam, for coming to the hospital.
Everyone came. It was like a party.
He reached across the console and patted Maddie's knee.
You feeling a little better now that he's out of surgery?
I guess so. It's just that I know so many people who lost a father when they were still young, and just the thought. Two friends at school, and even you, Uncle Adam.
She sniffed back tears.
I want Daddy to have a chance to be happy, that's all.
Your dad seems pretty happy to me, Adam said.
He says he's fine, that he's happy, that he's proud of me. But one time when we were talking, he said his one biggest regret was that he couldn't get Mom to marry him so we could be a real family. But he doesn't blame her. He said he made mistakes.
Mistakes,
Adam muttered.
Lots of talk about mistakes these days. You know what I think? I think I'm tired of hearing about mistakes. It would be a lot more productive to leave the mistakes behind and just think about the future.
Don't you have any regrets, Uncle Adam?
Everyone does, Maddie. But I think my life has turned out exactly the way I meant for it to. And it's a good life. Our family might be a little different, a little chopped up here and there, but last time I checked, we were all feeling pretty lucky with what we have.
Maybe till tonight, she said. I'll feel a lot better when I know Daddy's all right.
See what I mean? Adam said. He's a lucky man.
Riley got off the elevator on the third floor. She pulled her cell phone out of her coat pocket and glanced at it. 4 missed calls from Logan. She'd texted him about the accident, told him everyone was fine, but she was tied up and would call him later. Then she turned her phone off. And she knew where her cell phone was all along. She was relieved to see that none of Jock's family remained in the waiting room. She went into the recovery area where she'd seen Jock not 10 minutes ago, and there he was, sleeping off his anesthesia and pain meds, mouth open slightly. She felt tears threaten again. She walked over to his bed and gently touched his forehead.
Oh, Jock,
she whispered.
I'm the screw-up, not you.
All those years of being angry, of being awash in pride and determined to keep Jock from ever hurting her again, she held him back, held herself back. She put her head down and worked like a maniac, single-minded and aiming to succeed in business and show them all.
I am not a bad person, am not a disloyal, betraying friend. All I wanted to do was keep myself safe,
she whispered to him.
To keep Maddie safe, to prove to the world I could make it without trusting anyone.
He opened one eye and she sniffed.
You're right about me, Jock. I was always angry and scared. I never gave you a chance.
He lifted his hand to where hers rested on the bed rail.
It's okay, Riley, he rasped out. It's gonna be okay.
What if you'd been killed in that accident? What if I never got to say I'm sorry?
Shh, he said. It's okay.
It's not, really,
she said with a hiccup of emotion.
But maybe, when you get better, if you think you can give me another chance, I'd like us to be friends.
He smiled sleepily.
Okay,
he said, letting his eyes drift closed.
Boy, you really make a guy work for it, don't you?
A huff of laughter escaped her.
It wasn't my intention.
What about the other guy? The new guy?
He asked, not opening his eyes.
Not much going on there, Jock. But listen, let's not say anything to Maddie. I don't want her having fantasies about us.
Okay, he said.
He gave her hand a little squeeze, and she bent over and put a soft kiss on his forehead.
Suddenly, there was an orderly and a nurse at the bedside interrupting them.
We're going to take Mr. Curry to his room now. You can follow us if you like, Mrs. Curry, but then you should let him sleep and come back in the morning.
I'm not... Okay, she said. I'll follow you so I know where to find him in the morning.
Chapter 18. Adam and Emma stayed in for New Year's Eve. Emma parked her car in his garage in case Riley or June drove by.
I think the point of this discretion is just about moot, Adam said as he was taking her coat. My mother has guessed, I think Riley has guessed, and Maddie wouldn't care.
Still, until Riley assures me there are no longer any hard feelings between us, we will be discreet. One of the last things she said to me just before her phone chimed with Maddie's call was that she was stuck with me because of her family. She's not ready. By the way, where is Riley spending New Year's Eve?
She and Maddie took some snacks and a couple of board games to the hospital to spend it with Jock. I'm pretty sure they won't be allowed to stay until midnight, but they're keeping him company tonight.
Oh, that must make him very happy. He'd probably risk another car accident to get this much attention from Riley.
Now, why would you say that?
Adam asked. I think he cares for her very much. I think he might love her. The way he talked about Riley and Maddie, about how he screwed up with Riley, it just sounded like he has deeper feelings than he lets on in front of you. She put her arms around Adam's waist and looked up at him. Do you ever think about ways things could have been different?
Like how?
He asked, really wanting her perspective.
Well, Jock could have started dating Riley in the first place.
Then I think we would all have remained friends. But Riley might not have built her business. I get the impression she did it out of survival.
Or I could have come back here after college and fallen in love with you 10 years ago.
He stroked her cheek with the back of his knuckles.
Are you in love with me now?
She nodded.
Pretty much.
It all hangs on what you feed me tonight. If I'd known that, I would have tried harder. I have a big assortment of finger foods. Your favorite crab balls, stuffed mushrooms, a cheese ball and no dog present, spinach, artichoke dip, and a veggie tray.
She put her arms around his neck.
My absolute favorites.
You're a shoo-in. But Adam, when do you think you'll fall in love right back?
Emma, I've been in love with you since I was 18. I'm just waiting for you to get your life back so you can share it with me.
Well, I didn't expect this, you know? I thought I'd be spending my Saturday nights with my gay boyfriend and his jealous partner, looking for work all the time and trying to forget the debacle that was my marriage.
I don't know if you'll ever forget it,
he said.
We can move on in spite of it. Are you finally over the idea that being with you will hurt me?
I'm still worried that it might, but I'm now convinced I couldn't change your mind if I tried. There has been yet one more complication, one more piece of unfinished business I have to deal with. I'm going to see Rosemary tomorrow. She asked Lauren to get in touch with me. It seems Rosemary can't die in peace without seeing me, and she's coming back to Santa Rosa to die. She's in the house that had belonged to my father.
And you're going to do it?
He asked. I am. Maybe I'm crazy, but I'm hoping that since she asked for me, staring death in the face has made her kinder. But honestly, I'm scared to death. Our last words weren't very nice.
Let me go with you,
he said. You are my champion, she said. That's what Riley called you, my champion. Lyle also offered, but I told him no. You, I might take along. I always feel a little braver with you around. The house Emma grew up in was now about 40 years old. and because it was a custom home built on a large lot, it had held up handsomely. It was, she remembered, one of the best homes in the area, at least in the parish where her Catholic school was located. Compared to some of the homes Emma had cleaned lately, it seemed ordinary, but it wasn't. It was a large 5-bedroom, 3-bath home decorated in country French style. With its huge kitchen, spacious master bedroom and bath, the 12-foot ceilings, it had been considered very much upscale 40 years ago. The curb appeal was still there. The house was very attractive with its well-maintained lawn, shrubbery, and a couple of formidable trees, sitting on a wide street with well-spaced homes. Of course, Emma didn't have many good memories of the place. She was not Rosemary's child. Rosemary introduced Anna and Lauren as her daughters, Emma as her stepdaughter.
"I've never been in the house," Adam said.
"Never? How is that possible?"
"If I came to fetch Riley and walk her home, I waited on the stoop."
"I never noticed."
"But that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, let's get this over with." At first, Emma wasn't sure which of her sisters opened the door, as they looked very much alike, and she hadn't seen them in a few years. It took her a moment to realize it was Lauren, for not only did she look tired and ashen, but she'd gained about 100 pounds.
And then, right behind her was Anna, 37 now and morbidly obese. They both looked entirely miserable.
But how should they look, knowing their mother was dying?
The house was cluttered and held a strange smell. Dust, chemical cleaners, perhaps death.
"Happy holidays," Emma said, presenting Lauren with a gift basket filled with salami, cheeses, olives, wine, and other goodies, like chocolate.
Lauren didn't thank her, but took the basket and left it on the table in the foyer.
"Come with me," she said, turning so they could follow. They went in the direction of the master bedroom where Rosemary lay in a hospital bed rather than the bed that had been in there.
Rosemary had always been heavyset, but now she was shockingly thin, her color a bit jaundiced and her hair extremely sparse. All that sudden weight loss left her face sagging. There were bottles and vials on the dresser, an IV hooked up to her arm, and the room was messy with medical supplies. Her Bible lay on the bed beside her. Rosemary's eyes were closed.
"Rosemary?"
Emma said, merely breathing her name. She opened her eyes.
"Oh, it's you."
"Lauren said you wanted to see me."
"Yes." "Who is that? Another man so soon?"
Rosemary asked weakly.
"It's Adam Kerrigan. You remember him? Riley's brother."
She looked around the room.
"Rosemary, where's Vince?"
"Vince isn't here. He didn't sign on for this."
Emma actually grimaced. She hadn't liked Vince at all, but hadn't they been married quite a long time for him to bail out on her like that?
"So, you turned your lawyer on me,"
Rosemary said.
"No," Emma said, shaking her head. "Mr. Justice was my father's lawyer and helped him with his will. He offered to..."
"I am the trustee of my late husband's estate, and I want you to know what to expect. Your father left some money in a trust. It was left up to me to distribute with discretion. I have my own lawyer. He'll tell your lawyer if there's anything to distribute, but I highly doubt it. Then we have no further business. And I forgive you."
Emma's mouth hung open.
"You forgive me for what?"
"For being an ungrateful brat. For bringing shame on our family with your scandal. For never appreciating your good fortune. I'm going to die in peace, knowing I did everything I could and more than necessary."
Emma had to bite her lip to keep it from trembling.
So, Rosemary had seized one last moment to be cruel.
"And the house?"
"It belongs to my daughters now."
"My father's house?"
Emma said weakly. It was not a mansion by any means, but California real estate was valuable. Just guessing she would think a custom home this size on such a generous piece of property would go for a great deal of money.
It became my house,
Rosemary said.
You've never mentioned money before, Emma said.
You said there wasn't any.
It was a modest amount. There was no reason to discuss it, she said.
Then she winced as if in pain.
I was given discretion to use it for the children responsibly, and I did.
You didn't use any on me, Emma pointed out.
You were married to a millionaire,
Rosemary screeched, which sent her into a coughing fit. Lauren came rushing to her side. She held her mother up until she recovered. Then she gently lowered her again.
I was 16 when my father died, Emma said. I paid for college with scholarships, part-time work, and loans.
You remarried.
You don't need it now,
Lauren said bitterly.
My father built this house, Emma said.
He left it to me, and it has been transferred into my daughter's names. I want you to tell your lawyer this business is finished, that we have nothing more to discuss. I want to be at peace with this. Please tell your lawyer that you're satisfied everything is settled and stop pursuing this idiocy. Leave my poor girls what little I left them and go away. Don't be picking my bones like a selfish brat.
Stop, Adam said.
Stop it right now. I'm sorry for your ill health, Rosemary, but I think you've abused this woman enough. It's over.
Adam turned Emma around.
We should leave. There's nothing more to discuss here. I just want to leave peacefully knowing you won't visit your vengeance on my daughters,
Rosemary said. Emma just shook her head.
Why would I?
Knowing you, you think you deserve everything. You've always been haughty, Miss Homecoming Queen. Don't steal what I left for my daughters.
Adam just shook his head.
Let's go, Emma. You wouldn't want this house. The meanness has seeped into the walls by now.
He looked at Rosemary with a frown. Adam took Emma's hand and pulled her away.
Don't listen to her anymore, Emma. These people are poisoned with envy. Come on.
She let him pull her to the car and help her inside. She sat still, saying nothing, stricken. He started the car and began to drive away, and still she was silent. A good 5 minutes passed before she spoke.
I thought I was beyond being surprised by them. I thought I was beyond being hurt. She must hate me so much. Why does she hate me so much?
I think Rosemary might hate a lot of people. At the least, I think very few people are cherished by her. Emma, you can walk away from them knowing you were very kind. More kind than I would have been. I think that woman stole from a grief-stricken child. I wouldn't want to be where she's going.
She might meet Richard where she's going. His values were similar, I think.
The following week, Emma finally met with Lucinda Lopez again.
It's been over 2 weeks, Lucinda said. Your first Christmas in your hometown in at least 10 years.
More than that, Emma said.
More like a dozen. It didn't take me too many years after my father's death to see that my stepmother and sisters didn't really want me to interrupt their celebration. But it's a whole new life now. A simpler, quieter life. There was a little excitement here and there.
Emma told Lucinda first about Bethany and how she seemed much brighter and stronger now that the holiday was past.
That's very kind of you to take the time to listen to this troubled girl, Lucinda said.
Would you do something for me? If you think she trusts you, will you please promote the idea of her talking to her counselor? And if her counselor isn't helping her, suggest she ask for a new one or talk to someone at school.
Kids that age who have suffered loss are feeling isolated and fragile, and they're very unpredictable. I don't want you to find yourself up against a situation you can't handle. The loser could be the girl.
Yes, she said. Yes, of course. Can I suggest you?
You can suggest me, sure. In fact, you're welcome to tell her you're seeing a counselor. Sometimes that has a positive effect. I just worry when someone who has been depressed suddenly becomes cheerful.
Emma then told her about her visit with Rosemary and her plea that Emma leave her daughters and their inheritance alone.
My father has been gone for 18 years, and while we were comfortable, he wasn't a rich man. I can't imagine there's much, if anything. And I'm not going to stir up the curious press by going after money. In fact, I don't want to hear the word money associated with my name in any way.
You'll do whatever makes you comfortable, Emma.
I would like you to think about one thing. What your father had in his will was his ardent wish. If he willed something to you, he meant for you to have it.
I understand that. But it was meant for college. He told me when I was just a little girl that he was saving for college.
Well, college was paid for a long time ago.
And you just had a very simple, very quiet holiday. Much different from what you've experienced the past decade, I suppose.
I spent Christmas Eve and Christmas morning with Adam, who is more wonderful than you can imagine. He had dinner with his family at his mother's house, then came back to my little bungalow, bringing the best leftovers. I had to work the next morning, but he's off, Christmas break. He gave me a beautiful trench coat, and I gave him a sweater and slippers. Lucinda, it was perfection. So peaceful. All the stress of the world was somewhere else for a change. No flashy baubles, no fancy parties.
None of that filthy lucre, Lucinda joked. After some of the Christmases you've experienced in past years, how did it compare?
I've never felt richer, Emma said. Jock was released from the hospital after a few days, but wouldn't be cleared for work until after his next visit with the doctor, 10 days post-surgery. His mother wanted him to come home with her, but he flatly refused. His mother said she would stay with him at his house, and he said,
"Oh, just shoot me."
Riley witnessed all of this as she and Maddie were at the hospital visiting at the time.
"Don't worry, Mrs. Curry," Riley said. "We're close. We'll check on him frequently. And we're just a phone call away if Jock needs anything."
After his mother left to pull her car to the front of the hospital, Jock said,
"Thanks, Riley, but there's nothing to worry about. I'm finally going to have time to watch all those golf tournaments I recorded. I'm not going to need help with anything. I'm not going to be moving furniture."
"You're just going to camp on the couch, right?"
"That's my plan."
"Maddie's back in school. So we'll swing by after school tomorrow, and we won't stay long."
"Stay as long as you like. Or you can just drop Maddie off if you feel like it."
But she didn't feel like it. She wanted to take stock of his refrigerator, make sure his house was tidy because he couldn't do it. She even put fresh sheets on his bed because there was no telling how long it had been. She left Maddie with Jock and went to her mother's house. She asked for some of her plentiful stock of frozen meals she had prepared for her volunteer meal service. "For Jock," she explained.
"This is interesting. You going to such trouble for Jock," June said.
"Did you see how frightened and upset Maddie was when he got hurt? Had surgery? I knew Maddie was close to Jock, but for some reason I thought it was no closer than she is to Adam. But I was wrong. She's very close to Jock. I'm going to have to try harder to get along with him."
June gave her a dubious look and said,
"Of course."
She didn't take the meals to Jock's house. She took them home and put them in her freezer before going to collect Maddie. Then, the next day at around noon, she retrieved them and dropped in on him. He answered her knock, looking a little rumpled, scruffy, and slightly stooped because his incision was still sore.
"Riley."
He looked over her shoulder, looking for Maddie.
"It's just me. I brought some of Mother's meals for your freezer. And I also have some milk, orange juice, eggs, bread, lunch meat, and veggie salad from the deli.
You didn't have to do all that,
he said, but he let her in.
Aren't you working today?
Uh-huh, she said, loading things into the refrigerator and freezer. I took a long lunch. These meals are all frozen, thaw in just a few hours, and they're labeled. You have meatloaf and mashed potatoes, mac and cheese, lasagna, that meatball concoction she makes.
She raised her head and listened. There wasn't even a TV on.
Were you napping? She asked.
He indicated the kitchen table where his laptop was set up next to a cup of coffee.
Paying bills, he said.
Oh, Jock, are you going to have financial issues because of the accident?
Not serious ones,
he said, shaking his head.
I won't get what I need on that car, but I guess the lady, a girl, really, was charged with running the light, so maybe her insurance company will step up.
He chuckled.
At least she has insurance. The last guy who rear-ended me didn't.
Riley frowned. Did someone rear-end you?
10 years ago. Maddie wasn't in the car. She was still in a car seat back then, wasn't she? She wasn't in my car very often.
Because Riley had avoided that as much as possible. Not because Jock wasn't a safe driver. Because she liked having control, especially over him. She shook her head a bit mournfully. Maddie obviously adored him, and Riley had tried to give Jock as little time with her as possible.
Have you had lunch?
Not yet. I'll graze around in there when you're done. And thank you. That was nice of you.
I'll make you a sandwich and some salad. Go ahead and finish with your bills. Do you have more coffee?
Right there, he said, nodding toward the counter.
She was a little uncomfortable, and she could tell Jock was both confused and suspicious. But she had to start somewhere. So he went back to his computer, and she got out what she needed. Knife, fork, plate, bread, mayo. She was impressed to see he was very tidy. His refrigerator was clean as a whistle. That was a good sign.
Nice, she said.
The refrigerator was always one of the last things to get scrubbed. He had lettuce and tomatoes, so she added that to the sandwich. She bravely dished up a little salad for herself as well as him, then delivered the plate to him. She made herself a cup of coffee and joined him at the table. He looked at her for a long moment.
You're joining me for lunch?
Just a bite of the salad, she said. If that's okay.
It's okay. So you meant it? You want to be my friend?
Listen, if you'd rather I leave...
You want to just tell me what this is about?
She put her hands in her lap, her salad and coffee untouched.
Right, she said. First of all, I felt bad about Christmas night, about the argument we had, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. You nailed it, Jock. I've been angry. It's true, and I thought I had every right to be angry. But then when you got hurt and I saw how terrified Maddie was, it hit me hard that you'd always tried with me, even if it didn't go very well most of the time. And I didn't really try with you. And our daughter loves us both.
Yes, she does.
And you've had a very close relationship with her, one that I was barely aware of. It seemed you didn't see her that often.
He shrugged.
You weren't easy about that, and there was no reason to make life tough for Maddie by pushing you too hard. So I got her a phone, and...
She was much too young for that phone.
Jock waited patiently for her to get over that little outburst, and she did. There she was again, jumping to conclusions, controlling things. She twisted her lips a little.
Ugh,
she said, chagrined.
I got her a phone and a laptop so we could communicate, and we stayed in close touch. I went to all her school things when I could. My hours weren't always good. I had the store a lot of nights. But we were able to talk.
She's so smart, Riley. Like you.
Riley felt her cheeks grow a little hot, flushing.
You're smart, she said. She definitely got your legs.
He laughed.
Yeah, you've been looking up at her since she was 13. She's a beauty.
I didn't know you'd told her about Emma. I didn't know a lot of things you talked about.
I told Maddie it wasn't a good idea for her to carry stories about me to you and about you to me. I told her that would cause more friction between us, and she didn't want that.
I don't know where we start, Riley said. We've been kind of at each other's throats for a long time.
Not really. Not always, he said. I really pissed you off a few times, but around Maddie, we were always nice to each other. At least tolerant, thanks to June. But there is one thing that kind of grates on me. I don't know if I dare talk about it.
Maybe you better, she said. Let's get it all on the table.
You have to promise not to scream or throw things. I'm recovering from major surgery.
I have never...
She stopped herself because her voice had become shrill.
I've never thrown anything.
He smiled.
You seemed angriest with me when I tried to tell you I cared about you. I wanted us to have a chance. I thought I could be a decent husband, and I liked being a father. I knew I'd screwed it up completely in the beginning. I knew I wasn't really good enough for you. But I...
We didn't get off to a good start, she said.
My fault,
he said.
I don't have any excuses. I take that back. I have nothing but excuses. I was young and dumb, terrified, confused, not to mention I felt completely incompetent. I wanted to do the right thing, and I was pretty sure I wasn't capable of it. I had no education, no money, just a shitty little part-time job.
It wasn't all your fault, she said. Look, there's no way you can understand this, but I had a lot to overcome. I was a poor kid, a poor fatherless kid. I cheated on my best friend with her boyfriend, and she hated me, which she was bound to. I was ashamed and angry and pretty desperate. It gave me a little satisfaction to blame you for all my problems. Then I started my company, and I was afraid to look up for at least 12 years. When you asked for another chance, I couldn't hear you.
I asked a few times.
You married Lori.
I thought it might fix what was hurting. I shouldn't have done that to her.
But she dumped you.
We knew right away it wasn't working. But I'll be honest with you, I was gonna stay. I wasn't going to fail twice. But if you think our relationship is complicated, Jesus, Lori's life was a train wreck. She's back with her ex. They probably never should have divorced in the first place. And they fight 24/7.
Is it even possible for us to pick up the pieces after all this time and be friends? She asked. Do our grudges just run too deep?
I don't have any grudges, Riley. I've made peace with my screw-ups. I have a great family, a beautiful daughter, a good job, a few friends, and a decent life. If we can be friends, I'll be a happy man.
Did we bicker too much in front of Maddie? She asked. He laughed a little bit.
No more than your average married couple, he said. You take one look at Maddie and you know. She's pretty normal for a daughter of mine. You're a wonderful mother, and you're not the poor kid anymore, that's for sure.
She sighed. You can't imagine the kind of desperate ambition that took. I've craved a nap for 15 years.
She gave him a long look.
Don't you ever get lonely?
He shook his head. Hardly ever. Sometimes I go too long without seeing Maddie, but I can always talk to her. But lonely? Not so much. Do you?
She nodded.
Even though I have good people in my life, too. Sometimes it feels like there's something missing.
Now that I understand. So, is the new guy gonna be okay if you're friendly with your daughter's daddy?
New guy? She asked.
Then she remembered.
Oh, Logan, the police officer. I'm not sure that's going anywhere. He's a great guy, but...
She bit her lip. Riley, he's the first guy you've dated since we split,
he pointed out. Nah, I went out a few times, she said. Nothing ever clicked.
He just smiled. So here we sit. Two people who had a child together, raised a little girl together, bickered like cranky old married people, and could never find anyone else to fill the gap. Doesn't that make you a little curious?
Let's be careful here, Jock. If we screw up again, we might end up hating each other.
If I screw up again, you might end up hating me, but I'll never hate you. I never have. I've gotten a little pissed here and there, but I've always loved you. I just didn't know how to behave. I was a boy.
He's not a boy anymore, she thought. Go slow, she said.
They ate their lunch, talked about Maddie, then Riley cleaned up the kitchen and said she had to go back to work. He walked her to the door. Then he turned her toward him and put a gentle kiss on her forehead.
Be very careful, Riley,
he said.
I love you. I always have. But I'm not going back and forth. If being with me doesn't work for you, that's it. I don't want to experiment,
he said.
You're not the only one with feelings.
I know. I know.
Chapter 19. All the way to Aaron Justice's house, Emma was anxious. She was looking forward to seeing him again, but a little worried about how to pay him for the work he'd done when it turned out there was no money left in that estate. She should have called him and told him to stop whatever he was doing. He'd already invested valuable time. She'd find a way to pay him eventually. And she'd made up her mind. She wouldn't try to take that house away from her sisters. Really? It wouldn't make her happy anyway. Aaron now kept a small office in his house, the home he'd shared with his late wife. It was a lovely house that Emma had never been to before.
Emma, how good it is to see you. Come in. I've made us tea.
He invited her to sit down.
I'm not sure how many details you recall from our visit when we went over your father's will immediately after his death. You were so young and in a state of grief. I encouraged you to call me, but you never did.
Emma shrugged. I didn't see the need, she said. I remember that you said there should be a little money to help with school, should I go to college. And Rosemary did send me spending money sometimes. He frowned.
Let's go over the conditions of the will, just to refresh your memory.
The assets John Shea had accrued were to be split in two. Half to Rosemary, his wife, and half to be divided by the children. Rosemary was the executor of the will. She was also the trustee, which meant the inheritance held in trust for the children couldn't be spent on some young boyfriend. Emma almost laughed out loud. As if. The will included all three children, even though Anna was not John's biological child. And his plan had been to distribute the proceeds over time. Half of their portion when each child reached the age of 30, the second half at the age of 35. Those assets, however, were available for certain reasonable expenses. Welfare, as in the cost of housing and such. Education, down payment on a home, extraneous medical expenses not covered by health insurance, etc.
I paid for my own college, Emma said.
I know,
Aaron said.
As I told you, Rosemary got herself another lawyer soon after your father died. A few years after that, she changed lawyers again. She asked her new lawyer to write her a new will, which she was entitled to do. But the money your father set aside for you and your sisters was part of an irrevocable trust, meaning that if she withdrew any of it on your behalf for things like college, she had to have records. And she was to inherit the house as well. It was not held in trust. Emma, did you receive anything from your father's estate?
Emma shook her head. Rosemary said that just maintaining the house and raising three girls to the age of independence had been all she could afford. I counted myself lucky to get an allowance while I was in school. Small, but it helped.
She had receipts for tuition and housing.
She asked me for receipts, for records, she said.
When you were 30, you were due some money.
Wow, Emma said. I didn't know that. Or maybe I just didn't remember. My father was a pretty simple guy. I knew there might only be enough to get Rosemary through the difficult period of getting three daughters into adulthood.
Rosemary's attorney has provided an accounting of the trust. I have a balance due you that might be grossly inadequate, given the house, the funding that was misdirected, small details, and I recommend a good forensic accountant. You should challenge the trustee.
Emma let out a huff of rueful laughter. Aaron, the trustee is dying. I saw her. She has very little time left, and she wasn't pleasant. She asked me to leave her daughters alone, said that she's leaving the house and whatever money there is to them. I'm not going to challenge them. I'm not ever going back to court.
Unfortunately for Rosemary, she can't redirect the terms of the trust. The sum left to you is grossly inadequate. You're entitled to more. I'm afraid she was irresponsible.
She shook her head. I'll take whatever it is and I'll pay you, but I'm not going to pursue this. She can take the